Hello, Low Country. This is longtime ESPN commentator Dr. Jerry Punch inviting you to listen to the Scott Hamilton Show on 98.9 ESPN Charleston. It should be fun. After all, Scott has inside jokes with people he's never even met.
Let's ask our guest on the Say Time Hotline. He's a sports attorney. He's also a sports law professor, and he's the host of the Con Detrimental podcast. Dan Lust, a belated happy Thanksgiving, sir.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, too, and a lovely way to welcome us to the Friday when, Scott, you say we're all inevitably going to die. Hopefully I can bring up the audience a little bit here. Some fun topics, so yes.
I'm going to give the Jerry Seinfeld birthday speech just another step towards the grave or something, or inevitably. That's the best, man. Dan, did you have a good Thanksgiving?
Sometimes it's true, but all good.
No, did you have a good Thanksgiving?
I did. Lovely. Got to watch all the games. Got some college football in. It was an eventful day.
Well, Dan, I reached out to you the other day, and we love having you on, and I want to pick that expert mind of yours. We're talking about John Madden football. Now, I know it's not real football, but in a lot of people's minds, it is real football. John Madden has made an absolute fortune by linking his name to that very successful video game franchise. How does that work exactly? And then you heard my question. You referred to it. What happens when he inevitably passes on, and let's say they keep making it, who gets paid then?
Yeah, so a couple things. The John Madden scenario is not unique, obviously, to Madden. It's not unique to sports. If you're a video game or a Marvel guy, obviously Stan Lee is someone that's made a lot of money who has since passed away. That will go on to his kids. Even the Walt Disney legacy, right? So we do see this a lot in sports. There is a total, there's a world of intellectual property rights for people that have passed on. Albert Einstein, you can go on and on. There are families that are making a ton of money that haven't had their wealthy generating relative in years. So at least when it comes to Madden, every scenario is unique. But Madden is interesting. As sports fans, we know the Madden franchise has grossed billions, right? Legitimate billions of dollars. And you guys ask an interesting question, like where's all that going? My understanding is that at least for Madden, he took a deal. Maybe the family regrets it. But in about 2009, they paid him a lump sum, at least it was reported as $150 million for his rights in perpetuity. So that means for the family members' sake, they're going to be, maybe that $150 is being allocated across the family members. I think he's paid a couple million every time the franchise comes out. But my understanding is that it's not as heavy on royalties as it would have been had he not accepted that $150 lump sum, 10 or so years ago.
Oh, man. It's almost like the cast of Gilligan's Island. They didn't sign anything to get royalties from the reruns, and now they're just, a lot of them are penniless. A lot of them are dead, actually. So
There's a funny thing I read. The original Lion King, the actual animated series, the child actor that did the voice of Simba or did the singing voice of Simba, he didn't take anything up front. He took it all in back-end points. And the guy, if you look at the list of who grossed the most money from Lion King, this random 7-year-old child actor, the parents had the foresight, let's not take anything up front, let's not take six figures, it's all in back-end points. So this guy made tens of hundreds of millions of dollars from the success of Lion King. So, yeah, it's a little bit of a gamble, but I'm sure Madden knew what he was doing. He signed that in 2009. The game had been around for 20, 30 years at that point. So, let's hopefully the Madden family made out well here.
Just one more point. This is a great discussion. I could talk about this all day, but we'll move on to other matters after this. Alec Guinness, when he was approached to play Obi-Wan Kenobi, he thought it was the worst script he'd ever read. He thought it would be terrible, but he had the foresight to do it for royalties and for merchandise money to get a penny for every action figure or whatever.
Right. It's interesting. I mean, even you can take it into the current context. I did a law school panel on this recently with the Scarlett Johansson. She sued Marvel out of her deal, right? It was supposed to be front-end points based on this theatrical release. It wasn't supposed to be made up so much in back-end, but it was very tied to this theatrical release. Obviously, Scarlett Johansson still alive and well. But there's a lot of debate into whether stuff should get paid upfront or back-end. It's all about your risk tolerance. And if you really believe in something long-term, tie it into the back end, tie it into royalties. But some of us got to pay rent, right? Some of us don't have the liberty of cashing in when we're dead, right? So it's obviously an interesting calculus.
We're joined by Dan Lust. Follow him on Twitter at SportsLawLust. And Dan, I know you're an attorney and you're a professor, but have you ever thought about tiptoeing into the world of being an agent? Have you ever tiptoed into the agent world?
You know, briefly, that was my original aspiration in going to law school. I did work briefly for a baseball agency. But yeah, I mean, it's certainly a fun world. I've watched, you know, Jerry Maguire more times than I count. I've read a lot of baseball agency books. You know, I think I'm happy with my career path, but I do know a good amount about the agency world.
Well, then I'm going to ask you this question. One of the things we're seeing increasingly more over the past couple of weeks are coaches signing massive extensions. The market right now, not very good if you're looking to hire a football coach. The guys who do have good football coaches, or at least the ones that are perceived to be good, they're doing everything they can to keep them, to retain them. If you were a coach's agent right now, how would you gauge the market? Am I looking at it correctly?
Well, you're certainly looking at it correctly. I mean, it's one of two things. If you're a college coach, the market has never been better, right? The television deals are keep going up and up, so that's number one. Number two, there's this interesting world of, like, buyouts. There's coaches being paid tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, that aren't with those, you know, current universities. So, you know, the college football agents are doing very well. Obviously, Jimmy Sexton is probably the most well-known in that particular field. But, yeah, I mean, universities are making a ton of money. Tuition is only going up and up, and that money seems to be, at least a heavier percentage of that seems to be going to the college football budget. So if you're a college football coach, you know, I think it's a really good place if things are going well. You know, certainly massive deals that are coming your way. But then you could look at the other end, right? College football job security is probably at an all-time low. You have one or two bad years, you're out, right? Just the social media area, if you're Steve Sarkisian, or if you're Dan Mullen, as we saw over at Florida, that eject button is a lot quicker. Even Scott Frost over in Nebraska, you know, guys had a couple bad years. It was like a shock to some that he got renewed. But, you know, coaches want to build a dynasty. It takes 3, 4, 5 years. It doesn't be done in 1 to 2 years. So if it's going well, it's never been better. And if it's going bad, at least from a job security level, I don't think it's been worse than it is today.
Joined by Dan Less, sports business expert. And Dan, your podcast is off the charts. I really enjoyed it very much. Even my producer, I've got him on board listening to it now. You had a really good episode recently discussing the Cleveland Guardians, the former Cleveland Indians, and what it had to do in order to retain that name, Guardians. Can you kind of work us through that? Because I think it's really fascinating, and I'm wondering if we're going to see more examples of this as we move forward, as more teams start changing their names.
Yeah, so I appreciate the kind words. The podcast conduct detrimental. We kind of saw this issue a couple months ago. The Cleveland Indians announced they were changing the name in December of 2020. So, you know, with the Washington Redskins, now Washington Football Team, there's a couple Native American teams out there, be it the Chicago Blackhawks in hockey or Atlanta Braves, Kansas City Chiefs, you name it. It's out there. So maybe it's just a matter of time. We wanted to see how the first team dealt with this. So, Washington Football Team, the NFL, announced they were changing their name first. They haven't come to a determination of what that would be. Cleveland Indians announced they were changing their name second, and they actually jumped ahead of Washington and said, we're going to change our name first. We have a new name. It's the Cleveland Guardians. And then interestingly, you know, I didn't you know it at the time, but one of my Twitter followers reached out and said, by the way, I hope you know there is a Cleveland Guardians already. It's a men's roller derby team in the area. So I thought that was obviously interesting, right? The Cleveland Indians picked a name that was legitimately already in use, right? It wasn't like, you know, there's an XFL team, the New York Guardians. It's not in Cleveland. The Guardians of the Galaxy, right? People know the name Guardians. They have the Twitter handle, @Guardians. But that's a Marvel franchise. It has nothing to do with sports. But there is an entity of the exact same name. So you'd think you're a normal person, Scott, right? You, myself, I'd probably just pick a different name. That name's already been in use. So, yeah, the Indians found themselves in hot water because from an intellectual property level, from a trademark level, if you use the name, right, if you have the name, someone's not really allowed to come in and just copy it if you put some, you know, work and some sweat equity into that name. So the roller derby team had this name for 8 years and had been playing under it for 8 years, making a little bit of money, selling tickets, however many people are going to roller derby teams. And, you know, the interesting world was the Cleveland Indians picked the name in use. And they had this big reveal where the Cleveland Guardians, but legally they didn't really have the right to that name. So, I mean, I'm happy to break it down further, but I guess at a really high level, just a kind of a knuckleheaded decision from the Cleveland Indians to pick a name, to announce it, but before you have actually settled with this roller derby team, right? You could have paid to make them go away earlier. And then hindsight being 2020, they probably paid an extra zero, if not two, because they announced the name before actually settling with the roller derby team. So, I taught my class on it, a class at school, just the kind of comedy of errors from the baseball team here.
How do they not perform enough due diligence to vet this decision, especially in your own backyard, Dan? I mean, this is a multi-million dollar organization. Millions and millions and millions of dollars in revenue goes through the Cleveland baseball team, and yet they don't take the time to go down the street and to see that this is happening in their own backyard.
Well, that's really where the interesting question lies, right? Two things. Did they not know that this team existed, which is really bad? Or two, did they know it existed and decided to go ahead anyway and just hope that nobody would figure it out and this roller derby team wouldn't make a peep and us lawyers wouldn't figure it out? That's probably even worse, in all honesty, right? So if you don't Google it, which is, obviously, you could just Google Cleveland Guardians, it comes up. You'd think that would have been number one. They had public filings with Ohio State, this roller derby team. So I find it very hard to believe that they didn't know about the team name. And then the second, so we have to assume at this point they heard about it, right? They know a roller derby team exists. And we found out in hindsight that they did know about it, that they actually reached out to the roller derby team in June before they announced the name in July. So then you're in that world, right? And you let you basically announced the name on July 23rd, again, without settling with the roller derby team. And then it gets really interesting. So you have to say, the Indians could have dropped these guys, right, if they just kind of made it. They said, hey, roller derby team, listen, we're looking at four or five names here. You're in the running. If you want to take $50,000 right now and go away, that's great. But we're not really sure on the name. We haven't decided yet. They didn't do that. They just proceeded ahead. And at that point, they've told the world that they're going to become the Cleveland Guardians baseball team. So all of a sudden, this roller derby team has all the leverage. So why would they have done that? I think there is a history, at least it's been well documented, or at least relayed to me, of soccer teams, women's soccer teams actually taking roller derby team names. It happened twice, and those roller derby teams didn't put up a fight. They didn't get any money. So I think the Indians here probably, in all likelihood, cut a really bad corner here. They said, you know what, let's save $50,000, let's not pay the roller derby team, and let's just go on business as usual, and we're not going to pay them a buck. And Scott, as you and I both know at this point, it might have cost them maybe millions in PR just from how bad they looked. With this roller derby team kind of flexing on them, suing them, and then all suddenly having to pay them off. And then, Scott, mind you, ClevelandGuardians.com, the website, they didn't even get that as part of the settlement. That still belongs to the roller derby team. So I think they got fleeced in the deal at the end of the day, too.
Wow. The hubris of this team, Dan. The hubris of this team to think it could just steamroll over this roller derby team. I mean, they obviously didn't see the movie with James Caan. These teams don't play.
Rollerball with Keanu Reeves, that was a good movie back in the day. I think a young Dan Lust, that was one of his favorite movies. Keanu was pretty good there.
He's Dan Lust, sports attorney, sports professor. You can check out his excellent podcast, Con Detrimental Podcast, anywhere you can get a podcast. And you can follow him on Twitter at Sports Law Lust. Dan, appreciate you joining on with us, bud. Have a great holiday weekend.
My pleasure, guys. You too.
All right. Thank you. It's Dan Lust, sports law expert.